The South African Reserve Bank plays a critical role in the South African economy and strives to maintain price stability in the interests of balanced and sustainable economic growth. It is also tasked with protecting and enhancing financial stability, with its primary goal being stable and low inflation. With me now, South African Reserve Bank Governor Lesetša Ganyago. So thank you so much for your time. Certainly an exciting time, but the Trump tariffs right now are key on the agenda. What are your thoughts as the tariffs present that external shock to the general system right now?
Well, central banks don't set tariffs, and we also are not in a position to respond to tariffs. We have got mandates as central banks, and our mandates are price stability and financial stability. And so when tariffs are imposed, we know that tariffs are a cost on the imposer of the tariffs. So we know whichever country has imposed the tariffs, the consumers in that country are going to have to pay for that in the form of higher prices. And the country that exports there will obviously face a challenge in terms of output and the loss. But in the end, the people who pay for it are the consumers in the country that that imposes tariffs. How do we think about it? South Africa had tariffs levied against it, and we had to get down to the numbers and say how much of our trade is with the U.S. And the U.S. Accounts for some 7.94% of our exports. It's not an insignificant amount by any measure. And what you did, I say 7.94 billion dollars.
Yes.
Of our exports, and but in those exports you'll have to look at commodities. We export coal, platinum, gold, palladium, and so forth, and those are exempted from the tariffs. So the big impact is going to be on our agricultural sector and on our manufacturing sector, mainly automotives. And in the agricultural sector as well, it's particular products like wine, table grapes, citrus, and the lot. And in the bigger scheme of things, the thing would look like it's just a small percentage. But when you drill deeper and you look at the communities where these farms are actually located, where the production of these agricultural products is located, then you will know that the impact on that communities is very significant.
Governor, you've just come back from the European Bankers Forum or European Central Bankers Forum, correct? Give me a sense of the talk in the corridors with the new world order that is unfolding. I mean, there is a calamity in terms of whether it's BRICS or America. Is that translating into the corridors at a bankers' summit?
Well, calamity is central banks do not deal much with calamities, and we have not.
It's not a good word to be using with a central banker.
We have not seen a calamity yet. The beauty about the ECB forum on central banking is that you don't need corridor talk because the sessions are live streamed, so it's an open forum. So you do not need the corridor talk. Everything was spoken there on record. I mean, the ECB forum had a big focus on Europe and the challenges that Europe faces. Now, Europe is a very important trading partner for South Africa, and it's very important for any South African policymaker to understand the evolution of the European economy, the challenges the European economy is facing, and where it is going. And that I had found to be very useful. There was also a big discussions about the challenges that central banks actually faces at the moment. Almost every conference that I had attended in the past 6 months had the word uncertainty in it. It's monetary policy in the era of uncertainty, dealing with inflation in the era of uncertainty. And the word uncertainty just keeps on featuring, whether it is about financial stability, dealing with the challenges of financial stability in the era of uncertainty. And that is what we had faced. And that poses significant challenges for central banks, because what then central banks are faced with is that we have models, and models are calibrated in a particular way with parameters and so forth. And we can model most of the things that we face, but it has been very difficult to model what we see with the uncertainty in the global economy. And what has happened is that most central banks, including the SARB, had now been resorted to presenting a forecast and also present alternative scenarios. If these things materialize, that is how the economy would evolve. This is the policy challenge that we would face. And in that respect, the forum became very useful in the exchanging of those ideas.
Uncertainty, as you say, a big word for central bankers, and it has direct bearing on your interest rate policy, because you would assume that you have to be more vigilant, you have to be more cautious, and perhaps you won't continue an easing cycle given the level of uncertainty.
You said that our interest rate policy, the point of departure is, what effect does this uncertainty have on the inflation outlook and the future evolution of prices, and what impact does it have on economic activity? Because remember, our job as central bankers is price stability and financial stability. And so having to make policy in an environment of uncertainty poses those challenges. And that is why we end up presenting scenarios. Because remember, when we present forecasts, our forecasts are an approximation of what we think the future would look like. And so when we present the scenarios, we are basically saying, well, this is what we think the future would look like, but there are these things that we do not know much about. And if those things materialize, this is how the future would change. And there was this thing that says that the future is not what it used to be, because we have got all of these scenarios, and that's what we face.
When it comes to inflation targeting, you are looking, and I was listening to your discussion with Bloomberg last week on the sidelines of the European Central Bankers Forum. You have been modeling, discussing, looking since 2020 at rebasing the inflation target to a lower level. Mm-hmm. You utilize this opportunistic disinflation as a term, where because it's at the lower end of the band, you have an opportunity right now to reset. Mm-hmm. Can I get your thinking here? And again, how quickly this could be a reality for South Africa?
Can't put a timeline, because you said how quickly. Can't put a timeline. And that is why when you talk about being opportunistic means that you strike at a particular time, but you can't say when that opportunity really presents itself that you strike at that time. Conversations are ongoing between the Treasury and the Reserve Bank. They are at an advanced stage. The teams are working very hard, and without a doubt that we will arrive at some decision.
How do you balance, and as long as I've been interviewing you, Governor, we've had this discussion on debates, how you balance the growth and the containing of inflation and not damaging growth with overemphasis on inflation? I know you know this question well.
Remember what the mandate says. The mandate in terms of the Constitution says that we must protect the value of the currency in the interests of balanced and sustainable growth in the Republic. Underline the doing word. The doing word is protect the value of the currency. That's basically price stability. So the authors of the Constitution understood that price stability is not price stability for its own sake. Price stability is important for balanced and sustainable growth. For growth cannot be balanced and sustainable in an environment of price instability. And that is why the central bank is tasked with the responsibility of maintaining low and stable inflation, because low and stable inflation is in the interest of balanced and sustainable growth.
As you say, it's about opportunity and when opportunity strikes. But in your scenario planning, have you looked at what potentially will happen to the rand when we, if we do, rebase inflation to a lower level?
The papers are out there, Bronwyn, and in the May MPC, we also released a scenario, and we said that this scenario will be updated from meeting to meeting, and it will become a feature of the future monetary policy committee meetings. And as such, what we were showing was that with a lower inflation target, that yes, it would be seen positively in the markets. It would be seen with a strengthening of the currency, a lowering of interest rates. And by the way, we've seen that since the talk, what we have in the South African bond market, that bond yields have declined into single digits territories. So the working paper that we put out, which is a staff paper, by the way, it has got all the disclaimers. It's not a Reserve Bank paper. It's the views are those of the authors, but we released it because our staff do all this technical work, which then showed that with lower inflation, you'll have lower bond yields, you'll have lower interest rates, and interestingly, that you will actually have growth picking up, which is exactly what the authors of our Constitution envisaged, that price stability is in the interest of balanced and sustainable growth.
Governor, there's another trend within the South African landscape, the payments landscape, and that is potentially more deregulation in the payments environment. Is that something that is seriously being tabled, considering the association of payment providers South Africa, that formation, that grouping?
What we are presenting is not deregulation of the payment system. It's modernization of the payment system. We want to make the payment system accessible, cheaper, and more efficient. And that necessitated us having to embark on particular reforms, including modernizing our RTGS system, the real-time gross settlement system. That is the backbone of the payment system. All the others are tuning in into that space. And at the moment, what you have is that the clearing and settlement in the payment system had tended to be, you've got to be a licensed bank. Now, there are lots now of smaller providers who are using technology, and there are institutions that are seeing flows like retailers and so forth, and that these people, these institutions could actually help to lower the cost of payments. And so what we are working on is not the deregulation, but is to have an appropriate regulatory framework to allow non-bank participants in the national payment system.
Perhaps just on that same topic, looking at the changing banking landscape, Old Mutual Bank is on the cards. We've got TymeBank in a corporate activity. There's a lot of M&A. We see Bank Zero, Lesaka tying up potentially subject to regulation. Is this a shakeup of the landscape? What's your thought of the M&A activity that we're seeing?
Well, we don't comment on individual transactions or on individual institutions. Suffice to say that to the extent that you see corporate activity takes place because people see opportunity. And so it must be that various players in the South African payment and financial space see the modernization of the payment system as an opportunity. And as such, there is corporate activity for institutions to position themselves to take advantage of the changes in the payment ecosystem modernization.
What do you make of those people? There are a lot of economists out there that are so negative on our growth, right? It's coming in below 1%. They say that the policies are not helping from a general perspective. Do you feel relatively confident about the South African growth opportunity, Governor?
Growth is within the control of policymakers. Growth doesn't fall from the sky. You need policies that promote growth. And in so doing, there are two important aspects of a growth policy approach. The first is a set of macroeconomic policies. And those macroeconomic policies that have got to be prudent, and the macroeconomic policies would fall into the realm of fiscal policy and monetary policy. And that is the easy stuff to do and to coordinate, because there are two institutions that are responsible for macroeconomic policy, and it is the National Treasury and the South African Reserve Bank. The Reserve Bank responsible for monetary policy, the National Treasury responsible for fiscal policy. The posture and the stance that those policies take have got to be prudent, because they create an environment for the other policies to tune in. For the growth to really take off, so let me put it this way, so it was an African president who said that having prudent macroeconomic policies is like preparing the field for planting, clearing the field, clearing the weeds and everything. If you don't plant something there, growth is not going to take place. So you can't then blame macro, for example, because macro had cleared or clears the field. You can't say that you shouldn't have cleared the field, you'd have left the field dirty, because you must contribute more towards growth. You must understand that macro creates that environment. It prepares the field so that things can be planted. The things that have got to be planted are in the realm of microeconomic policy, micro reforms, sometimes also called structural reforms. Those things lift the growth rate of the economy. So put simply, once those move in, and thus you are now planting things, you're putting fertilizer, you're putting manure, you're irrigating the field, the plants blossom, and eventually a harvest comes out. But remember, I've talked about prudent macroeconomic policies. As your crop comes up, weed re-emerges, and it is important for macroeconomic policy to continue to de-weed and make sure that the land is adequately suitable for the crop to produce what we are actually looking for. So if we have to get growth bringing, you're going to have to get this stuff on macroeconomic and microeconomic reforms together. Say a friend of mine who teaches economics and is running a growth lab where ideas are tested about growth and so forth. And he describes uses another analogy, and he describes macroeconomic policy, monetary and fiscal policy, that because you have got two authorities, it's like a boxing match, and you could have that, that's an easy thing to go. But that micro policy that I was talking about, having to get the fertilizer, the tractors to till the land, the irrigation, the manure, and the pest control to make sure that you have got the crop that comes out. And he characterized that as almost tantamount to conducting an orchestra, because there are so many players coming. And part of the reason why many countries end up not growing, including ours not growing at the pace that we, is that the orchestra has got to be playing in sync. It's got to be conducted to produce the kind of music that you are actually looking for.
Is it going to happen? Is the orchestra going to start playing in sync?
Remember, I'm playing in the other game, not in that one.
I was wondering whether you were going to venture into whether that would start. I again, with Francine from Bloomberg's interview, she said to you, right, what's going to happen to interest rates at the MPC in July? And you said, Francine, really, I'm not going to give you that answer, right?
I can give you the answer.
Can you give me the answer?
Yeah. If you wait until the 31st of July, you will know.
I know. You see, you can catch me anytime, Governor. But I thought it might be worthwhile just giving some insight to our viewers as to what actually transpires at that MPC meeting. You don't go in there with a predetermined idea. It's about debate. It's about weighing in and ultimately coming out the other side.
Well, you do go with a predetermined idea. The documents, you get the documents a week before the MPC. You go through the documents. You must apply your mind and form a view. What is important is that don't get into the MPC with a dogmatic view. Get in there with a view of convincing others and being open to be convinced away from your view. The discussions are very collegial. They are robust and they are underpinned by data and rigorous analysis. One basic rule in monetary policy formulation: you are entitled to a view. You can express an opinion. There is one thing you are not entitled to. You are not entitled to your own facts. We move on the basis of the same facts. We apply our minds to the same facts. And we exercise judgment and say, this is where I think policy should go.
I know you're not going to give me any more on the MPC, but we're all waiting with bated breath to see what comes out in July. I want to, just as a final
point. We are in July.
End of July. End of July, sir. I also want to talk about your appointment, your official appointment. The official ceremony at the end of June was for your appointment as Chancellor of the University of Stellenbosch. This must be something that is really phenomenal in terms of your future outlook.
Remember that this is a ceremonial role, a significant one, though. If you still have an appetite to study and you study with the University of Stellenbosch, you might just have an opportunity to be kept by me when you finish your degree. But more seriously, this is an institution that has got a history of over 100 years. It's been very much part of our past, good and bad. And it is an institution that had set itself to be amongst the best in the world and a leading one on the African continent. And at the beginning of the year, I had an opportunity to preside over a number of graduation ceremonies at the universities. It gets a long day listening to names and keeping everyone and sitting in that chair. But I only stand up for the PhDs. And there were a number of PhDs that came through, and one looked at the demographics of the PhDs coming out of the university, that you could see that this is a university on a journey to be an institution of a democratic South Africa. I also had an opportunity to quickly scan through the titles of the dissertations of those PhDs, and it said to me, here is a university where the students are focused on finding solutions to real life problems in the South African society. And as they were coming through and as I looked at what their dissertations were, it made me feel proud and that I actually made a decision accepting to become the Chancellor of the university.
I said that was the last question, but actually you started our conversation saying that the big word in banking circles is uncertainty, uncertainty, uncertainty. So which of those uncertainties, Governor, weighs in most heavily with you?
Uncertainty is uncertainty, and central bankers do not like uncertainty, because where you have got a level of uncertainty, you your decision-making process gets complicated. And we do look at measures of uncertainty. One measure that we look is uncertainty in the financial markets, and that tends to be measured by the VIX index. We look at a measure of trade uncertainty, and that captures the changes in trade policies of different countries. We look at geopolitical uncertainty, and that checks where are the tensions around the world. And lastly, we look at economic uncertainty, and that economic uncertainty refuses even to look at the data that comes, what surprises us, what has deviated from what we thought it would be. So we look at all of those. They are all measures of uncertainty. So you can't say I put more weight on this because the economy gets...
It's a basket of uncertainty. Governor, thank you so much for your time. I've been chatting to South African Reserve Bank Governor Lesetša Ganyago here on BizNews.